There was plenty of reporting last week of the mystery green train which pulled into Beijing for an historic meeting between China and North Korea. Both sides say the meeting was a success, but all of this is leading up to a climactic point in the next couple of months when North Korea's Kim Jong-un and US President Donald Trump are set to sit down face-to-face to negotiate a deal, hopefully to decrease tensions on the Korean Peninsula. Now, Donald Trump agreed very quickly to the idea of the meeting, even before terms had been negotiated. The meeting has been described by the New York Times as a breathtaking gamble for him, and one that's sure to test the notorious dealmaker's skills. I've been taking a bit of a look at those skills.
I'm going to make the great deals.
I am going to make great deals for our country.
I mean, what I do is I do deals. I deal.
I make deals. I negotiate.
Nobody can out-negotiate these deals.
Donald Trump loves talking about his deal-making abilities. His most famous book before becoming president was called The Art of the Deal, and he's fond of spouting quotable quotes about his deal-making skill as well. Like this tweet he fired off a few years ago.
Deals are my art form. Other people paint beautifully or write poetry. I like making deals, preferably big deals. That's how I get my kicks.
That's Greg Krieg, political reporter for CNN, who has been keeping a close eye on Donald Trump's deal-making since he became president.
He obviously very much enjoys the scenery in a boardroom. I'm across a conference table from people. I'm making a deal.
This year, for the first time, we have been able to watch Donald Trump's deal-making process live. In two negotiation sessions between Republican and Democrat politicians and the president inside the White House, which were broadcast on television.
He did it once in January, he did it again at the end of February. Sometimes he'll kind of overpromise or he'll expose his own lack of knowledge on a particular issue. On both occasions, he kind of talked himself into a corner and basically agreed to at least consider things that were pretty much the opposite of what he had previously stated he wanted.
The first of these meetings Greg Krieg is talking about happened in early January, just after the book Fire and Fury alleged that the president's mental faculties were decaying. The meeting was seen as an attempt by the president to show that he was in control. The meeting, with Republican and Democratic leadership, was about immigration. Here's what happened, starting with Democratic Senator Dianne Feinstein.
What about a clean DACA bill now, with a commitment that we go into a comprehensive immigration reform procedure?
I have no problem. I think that's basically what Dick is saying. We're going to come out with DACA. We're going to do DACA. And then we can start immediately on the phase two, which would be comprehensive.
Would you be agreeable?
But I think we have to do DACA first.
It's complicated to explain how, but Donald Trump has just conceded a vital negotiation point to the Democrats there. Republican Congressman Kevin McCarthy swept in to try and flip the president back.
Mr. President, you need to be clear, though. I think what Senator Feinstein's asking here, you have to have security, as the secretary would tell you.
But I think that's what you're saying.
I think she's saying something different.
Chaos reigned, and hardline conservative commentator Ann Coulter told Fox News' Lou Dobbs that she was horrified by what she saw.
I mean, he was clearly trying to overcome the bad press of this Michael Wolff book by showing, oh, he's in command. But in fact, what he did was fulfill every description of him in the Michael Wolff book. He doesn't listen. He has no command of the facts. He agrees with the last person who
speaks
to him.
We don't need to go through the whole damn book.
DiFi says she wants a standalone Dreamer bill. He agrees with that. Kevin McCarthy has to step in and say, no, sir, I think we need border security first.
To be clear, this is Ann Coulter, who published a book in 2016 called In Trump We Trust. She's no liberal snowflake. In February, in another televised meeting with Republicans and Democrats, Donald Trump flipped his position on guns, agreeing almost entirely with the Democrats' position.
Number one, you can take the guns away immediately from people that you can adjudge easily are mentally ill. The problem, they didn't take any guns away. Now, that could have been policing. I think they should have taken them away anyway, whether they had the right or not. Now, a lot of people are saying, oh, I shouldn't be saying that. I'll tell you what, I don't want mentally ill people to be having guns.
To be clear, this is the complete opposite to the position his party was taking on guns at the time. Now, as Greg Krieg points out, Donald Trump's flip-flops on these issues haven't actually had any ramifications for US government policy.
In both cases, there was no substantial legislation that followed, and certainly none of the promises that he made or implied in those meetings ever came to fruition. You know, they always say about President Trump is that, you know, the last person to speak with him will have the most influence on his decision. He wants to create the facade of deal making when, in fact, deals are not struck in these meetings. Everybody walks out of the room and, you know, goes back to their respective corners, and he does not kind of back up what he might have promised behind closed doors.
That might be all well and good when you're talking about the US Congress, which works in a symbiotic relationship with the president, whereby if they don't agree on something, it pretty much doesn't get done. But in international negotiations, like the upcoming one with Kim Jong-un, Donald Trump only has control over what is said in the room. If he shakes hands on a deal, presumably North Korea will then go off and begin fulfilling their half of that deal, even if President Trump changes his mind by the time he gets back to the White House.
Whatever Trump says to Kim, Kim will presumably take as, you know, the American position. So, yeah, there's definitely a potential for them to walk out of that room with differing interpretations of what happened. And obviously that could lead to some pretty touchy scenarios.
But in the field of international negotiation, some think that Donald Trump's record isn't too bad.
You know, I'm not a fan of the guy, but, you know, let's give him credit for what he's good at.
That's Rob McClelland, the head of a financial advisors group in Canada. He thinks that Donald Trump's handling of the North American Free Trade Agreement, or NAFTA, negotiations has put the U.S. on the front foot.
When you do a negotiation, a good negotiator sets an anchor, be it a price, be it a date. And once you've done that, everything sort of has to follow from that point. So what he did is he started off and he said, okay, we're going to put a tariff on steel, which is probably one of the biggest things to be negotiated. And we're going to start at 25%.
Canada is the US's biggest source of foreign steel, and a 25% tariff was set to be devastating for their industry there. Donald Trump's steel tariffs announcement has mostly been wound back by the government now, but not before it rendered Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau just about speechless.
The Americans have a significant trade surplus. The Americans have a significant trade surplus with us.
Rob McClelland thinks this was a brilliant way to put Canada on the back foot in negotiations over NAFTA.
You've already got everyone else on the defensive, but they've got a number in mind. So if we settle at 20%, Canada feels like they got a victory, or 15%. Canada feels like, well, he wanted 25, we got 50.
Now, Donald Trump has since admitted, or more accurately, boasted, that during his early conversations with Justin Trudeau, he was bluffing and was short on information. He's told a fundraiser that he was just making up facts when he talked about the trade balance between the two countries. But Rob McClelland says that doesn't really matter.
Most people would want all the facts. I certainly would want all the facts. He doesn't seem to worry about that stuff. And, you know, he's a far better negotiator than probably 99% of the population. So,
will that work on Kim Jong-un, though?
I wouldn't underestimate his power of negotiation in anything that he does. You know, just look at how he got to be president of the United States, the most powerful nation in the world.